I'm Dennis Tubergen. You are listening to Retirement Lifestyle Advocates Radio. Glad you decided to listen in today. Hey, joining me in segments two and three of today's program is renowned cycles analyst, Dr. Charles Nenner. I caught up with Charles Nenner this past week and got his thoughts on where the markets are headed based on his cycles research. So again, that's coming up in segments two and three of today's program. And it is May, which means I have a brand new special report for you. The May special report is simply titled A Probate Avoidance Guide. It's a probate avoidance guide. All you need to do to get your copy of the report, as well as some bonus information, is visit the website, requestyourreport.com. The website again, requestyourreport.com, and I'll be very glad to send you a copy of this month's special report titled Probate Avoidance Guide, absolutely free. You'll also get some bonus information in the box of stuff we send to you. So again, requestyourreport.com. There's an eternal truth when it comes to finance that's not discussed as often as it should be, in my view. Now, what is that truth? You're probably wondering. Well, here it is, simply stated. If there's too much debt to be paid, it will not all be paid. Let me say that again. If there's too much debt to be paid, it will not all be paid. Now, you're probably saying, well, Dennis, that's not very profound. That's hardly an epiphany. But it is a very fundamental truth that will ultimately lead to an economic reset in many countries around the world, in my view. Now, I'll talk to Dr. Nenner about his take on this again in segments two and three of today's program. But first, just to provide some perspective, just to provide some context, let me give you some background. Ever since 1971, the U.S. dollar has been loaned into existence. What does that mean? That means that ever since 1971, U.S. dollars are debt. Now, you're probably listening to this going, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. But here's the context. Prior to 1971, going all the way back to 1944, and something called the Bretton Woods Agreement, the U.S. dollar was an asset, and it was convertible to gold at a rate of $35 an ounce. So in 1944, when most of the countries of the world gathered in Bretton Woods, New Jersey, it was proposed that the U.S. dollar become the reserve currency, the currency that countries would hold in inventory or reserve and use in international trade. And all countries were very comfortable with this agreement because at any time they could take the U.S. dollars they had in inventory and they could exchange them for gold. So what happened in 1971? Well, leading up to that time, there was excessive currency creation in the United States. This was brought on by the advent of the Medicare program and Medicaid program. The Vietnam War was going on. Wars are expensive. And the convertibility at that point of U.S. dollars for gold was temporarily suspended by then President Richard Nixon. Now, a bit more background information here for you. In 1944, the U.S. purported to have about 21,000 tons of gold in reserve. By 1971, the amount of gold the U.S. held in reserve, at least the amount reported, was about 8,000 tons, which is about where we are today. So in essence, what led to this temporary suspension of U.S. dollars for gold was the equivalent of a run on the bank by foreign entities who were entitled under the Bretton Woods Agreement to exchange their dollars for gold. Well, starting in 1971, the U.S. dollar became a fiat currency. If you look at any Federal Reserve note that you have in your wallet or purse or pocket, you see the words legal tender for all debts, public and private. It is legal tender for all debts, public and private, because the government says it is. There's nothing backing the U.S. dollar other than the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Now, once the dollar became a fiat currency, debt levels on the balance sheet of the federal government began to explode. We are now at about $35 trillion in debt. Those debt levels have increased exponentially since 2020. Going into 2020, debt levels were just over $20 trillion. They're now about $35 trillion. And going back to 1971, there was not even $1 trillion in debt. Now, I have on this program over the past few weeks quoted the Austrian economist Ludwig von Mises. Now, in my opinion, if you want to know what happens when this debt goes unpaid, and you can do the math, if you have a calculator with enough zeros, anyway, you can do the math, this debt will never be paid. Now, coming up here on the program in a couple of weeks, I'm going to interview Jim Rogers. Many of you recognize Jim Rogers as an investor and an author, very wealthy guy, was the founder of a hedge fund back in the 70s. He lives in Singapore. I'm going to talk to him about whether or not the U.S. government can ever pay down this debt. And in short, I'd encourage you to listen to the interview in a couple of weeks. But in short, he said, I don't see how it can happen. Well, von Mises, going back to the Austrian economist, when discussing this debt accumulation endgame, said this, quote, there is no means of avoiding the final collapse of a boom brought about by credit expansion. What does that mean? Well, what is credit expansion? Well, how is currency created? You don't create currency by cutting down trees, making paper, and putting green ink on the paper. Currency is created digitally by expanding credit. So von Mises says this very, very straightforwardly. There is no means of avoiding the final collapse of a boom brought about by credit expansion. The alternative is only whether the crisis should come about sooner as the result of the voluntary abandonment of further credit expansion. In other words, the policymakers just decide we're going to stop creating currency. Or does it come about later as a final and total catastrophe of the currency system involved? Von Mises says there's only two choices. You stop creating currency or you continue and destroy the currency. So we have to either, one, quit accumulating debt cold turkey and deal with the deflationary consequences that will undoubtedly, inevitably emerge, or we continue accumulating debt, papering over the debt problem with newly created currency, resulting in a hyperinflationary environment, at which point you have to stop, and then you get deflation. So to put that another way, you are either proactive about dealing with the debt or you are reactive. And if you're reactive, it means you're going to attempt to address the issue after inflation is completely out of control. Now, there are a lot more examples historically of this latter example. Inflation running rampant, inflation running completely out of control, and the policymakers and politicians in control in each of these circumstances have to be reactive in the way they address this problem. There's Weimar Germany after World War I. You've all undoubtedly heard the story. France in the 18th century, two different times. The Roman Empire, early colonial America. Time and time again, when currency is created, many politicians and policymakers have chosen the latter choice. They've just decided we'll address it when we have to. Now, in the last segment of today's program, I'm going to share with you the story of one country, one politician, I might say one brave politician, that is standing up and saying, we're going to make the first choice. We're going to stop. We're going to address this proactively. We're not going to address this reactively. And I'll give you that story in the last segment of today's program. But before I go to break, before I come back with Dr. Charles Netter, let me remind you that the report for the month of May is the Probate Avoidance Guide. You can get the report as well as all the bonus information by visiting requestyourreport.com. I'd encourage you to do that. Again, it's requestyourreport.com. And I will send you a couple copies of a couple of my best-selling books as well. You'll get a copy of the Revenue Sourcing book. You'll also get a copy of the Little Black Book on Social Security Maximization. I'll be back after these words. Stay with us. Welcome back to RLA Radio. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Joining me once again on today's program is returning guest, Dr. Charles Netter. Dr. Netter has to be one of the premier market analysts in the industry today. He uses Cycles Research. You can learn more about his work at charlesnenner.com. That is spelled N-E-N-N-E-R, charlesnenner.com. And you can actually get a 30-day free trial to check out his work. No credit card needed. Again, the website, charlesnenner.com. And Dr. Netter, always a pleasure to catch up with you, get your perspective. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, it's great to be back.
So, Charles, just for our listeners that may not be familiar with what it is that you do, could you give a little bit of background about your work and how you arrived at where you are today professionally?
Okay, so I was trained as a medical doctor in Amsterdam. And I joined a group in a psychiatry that was trying to figure out if people became psychotic in certain periods all over the world, which they did. And that's the first way I found out about cycles, that every so many months, every so many years, they turned out to be more psychotic. And then I was on vacation in New York, and I watched CNBC. And I said, the market goes up, the market goes down, and didn't make much sense. So I started looking, and that was in the early 80s, at 100 years of Wall Street Journals, because there were no good computers at the time. I did everything by hand. And I found out that markets don't move at random. A couple of years later, I turned it into what then was called a neural network. Today, you will call it artificial intelligence. Make a story short, I ended up to be managing director at Goldman Sachs for many years. Doing all the market timing for the own investments of Goldman Sachs. And after the crash of 2007, when Obama thought in his innocence that it would be too dangerous to take these huge positions, we had to close down a lot of funds and partners left, and we started our own firm. They left doing their own hedge funds, and I'm the only one who continued. So I have this firm that uses the, now we would call it artificial intelligence, that can tell about most assets. We do like U.S. bonds, all the currencies, the S&Ps, the European market, gold, silver, crude oil, natural gas, exactly when there is a market low, when there's a market top, and how high a move can go and how low a move can go. It sounds, for newcomers, it sounds strange because they think it's connected to the news, and we have been proven that it doesn't. You can just calculate, the computer can calculate if a move starts going up, how high it goes, and how many weeks or months it takes in order to reach the top. And we've been doing this now, what is it, almost 20 years, supporting a lot of hedge funds and banks and institutions, and also individual investors.
So, Dr. Netter, it's interesting that this started out as psychiatric research, and it's got applicability to markets. So when we talk about cycles, are cycles universally applicable to just about any area of life in your research?
Yes, the cycles in climate, the cycles in earthquakes, the cycles in traffic. We have clients that are very big in fashion, and they want to know what the fashion is going to be the next 2 years, because they're a lot of many being manufactured in Hong Kong. So we look at the cycles of the last 100 years, like, if for men, if the if it's double breasted or single breasted, or what the pants looks like. We do cycles for record companies. They bring out new songs. It's important to bring it out in winter or in summer or in spring. It's important if a man sings it, if a woman sings it. There's a lot of research going on in all these products that the average consumer has no idea about it. On top of that, the big firms that I don't want to mentioned by name that have to know when to sign a contract to buy their beef, because they sell hamburgers. We have people who are in the business of selling oranges, so they have to make a contract and have to know if they sell now their oranges for the next 2 years, next week or in 3 months, because the difference could be 10-15%. So there's a lot of research going into this. Now, if you believe that things move at random, then actually you cannot prove anything, and you don't know what you're doing, because it's all a gamble. So there's a whole lot of research in financial markets, and all the big players use that research, and they're convinced that things don't move at random. The problem with the small investor is that he listens to all the anchors on television who have no clue about anything, and he gets just totally thrown off that there is such a science. And he listens the whole day to the stories, and the stories are always putting him in the wrong foot. For instance, if, when we have a low in gold, you don't hear anything about gold. But when gold is up already 90% out of the 100% it's going up, then suddenly the pickup, oh, gold is in a bull market, and then it's almost over. And then the small investor starts buying gold, and then it crashes, and then he wonders why he loses money. And it's always the other way around.
Well, if you're just tuning in, my guest today is Dr. Charles Nenner. His website is charlesnenner.com. You can get a 30-day free trial to his work, and no credit card is required. Again, the website, charlesnenner.com. So, Dr. Nenner, you just gave gold as an example. You were on the program about 5 months ago, and you suggested that there was more downside in the cycle, but then your cycles pointed to an uptrend, an upcycle in gold. And sitting now, here we are 5 months later, you were spot on. So what do you see for gold moving ahead?
Well, we sold gold about $100 higher than it is now. I think in the high 2400s, because the cycle topped. If you go to the website, you can see exactly how it topped. And we could test the highs one more time, but for the moment, we've seen the high. And now it's a problem, because now, all everybody talks about the gold. And now every time it moves up again, the small investor is going to buy, but now the cycle topped a little bit. And now we should just stand aside waiting for the next cycle low, which is going to be a while away.
So, Dr. Nenner, the big headline this past week was that the U.S. economy contracted and inflation, PCE, as measured by PCE, heated up. Do your cycles track where you think inflation's going in the future? And if so, what do they tell you?
Yeah, well, we started an inflation cycle of 30 years. There's a very clear cycle of 30 years. We publish it also. There's a very clear cycle for the last 250 years of interest rates. So when the interest rates were like 1% or less on the 10-year, and it was in the early 2000s, we warned people, don't buy any bonds. I know it, we have seen lower bonds for the last 40 years, but it's not going to continue. And it has led to a catastrophe, because people have been in bond funds, so they cannot even get the money back. And we're going to have higher bond yields until the middle of the century at least. And we expect them to test the highs of the mid-70s, which was like 16, 17, 18%. Of course, it goes in ups and downs. So first of all, we have seen very nice up moves in the stock market, We expect to see, because the cycle bottomed last week, so we expect to see one more up move. We've seen a nice up move in the metals, and now in a week or 2 weeks, we expect to see a nice up move in bonds. So right now, interest rates are not going higher, but longer term, they go much higher. Oh, yeah. You asked me about inflation. Yeah, inflation is going much higher. I think the next low in inflation is going to be in the summer, and then inflation should move higher. So we have a what's called a stagflation. The economy is going to drop that, and the inflation is going higher.
Well, it certainly seems like stagflation is the outcome that we're headed for, and your cycles seem to confirm that. I want to go back and just revisit what you said. You suggested that bond yields could go as high as we saw them in the 70s, and that was, mid to upper teens. And you suggested that could happen over the next 20 years. The cycle could be that long. Did I understand that correctly?
That's correct.
So if you're an investor now and you're in a 401k, you're in an IRA, you have your retirement money that you're investing, what advice are you giving your subscribers to the extent you're comfortable sharing that?
Well, if you watch our research, then you have one more chance to get out of the stock market because they're going up one more time. You have, I would say, you have one more chance to go out of the bond market when the move starts in a week or 2 weeks. You have big losses, so it's hard to say to get out of it because it's very difficult. I think the bonds from since we sold them are down 50% or so. So what are you going to do? You have to be a little bit more active. Otherwise, things are not going to end well. The dollar is losing a lot of its purchasing power. In the end, gold is going much higher. The problem with gold is if you're a long-term investor, and that's why I say I've seen this problem when someone on TV, it goes like this. If gold is like 2400, and I say long-term, we go much higher, then people say I'm there in for the long term. But then if it goes to 2200, I'm in there for the long term. Once it's 2100, they don't sleep anymore and they sell out just before it goes up again. So you really have to watch these things. Like I said, if you want to know how the experts and hedge funds are doing and approaching this, please look at my website. It's not going to cost you anything for 30 days and see, at least have an idea how you can approach the markets. That's all I can do. You have to be more active, otherwise you're going to be in bad shape. I mean, I'm right now in Florida. I see 85 years old packing my stuff when I go to the supermarket, and I say, what's going on over here? Well, this is, I thought I had enough for retirement, but with these prices, I have to go back to work. And soon a lot of older people have to go back to work because, what they thought that they have is not enough to survive.
Well, my guest today is Dr. Charles Nenner. His website is charlesnenner.com. You can check out his work for free for 30 days, no credit card needed. I'd encourage you to check it out. I'll continue my conversation with Dr. Nenner when RLA Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to RLA Radio. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. I have the pleasure of chatting once again today with returning guest, Dr. Charles Nenner. His website is charlesnenner.com, and Dr. Nenner's research, his research that I follow regularly. He is a very bright guy. He tracks markets and a lot of other things from the perspective of cycles. You can check out his work on his website free for 30 days. Again, the website charlesnenner.com. So let's shift gears just a little bit, Dr. Nenner. I know that from you being out in the past that you track a lot of different cycles. Another one being war cycles. And when you take a look at what's going on around the world, geopolitical tensions are rising. What do your war cycles tell you about where we're headed?
Well, the war cycle started, my war cycle started in the Mandarin Empire about 3,000 years ago. Of course, we have, like in the markets, we have yearly cycles, quarterly cycles, monthly cycles, and the long-term cycles, they turned up. And for your readers, it's maybe, or your listeners, it's interesting to look, for instance, at the 100-year cycle. Every second decade of a new era, there is a major cycle low that will say, We had the First World War in 1918 that continued the Second World War. We had the Napoleon War 100 years before. We had the Habsburg. Most of the wars were then in Europe. And if you go back and you Google around this, the change of the century, you always see the 100-year cycle. So I said, in the second decade of the century, wars are starting again. More cycles are going up. So we're in big trouble. And we're going into major wars over here. Now, the interesting thing is, people will say, is there nothing we can do about it? Well, the problem with cycles is there's not much you can do about it. So what can you do? So I'm like, my example is, after the winter comes the summer, and then comes the winter, it doesn't change. The only thing is, when you know it, you can buy a winter coat. So I have people who are very involved in this, and they look where they're going to and what they can do about it. But this is going to be a huge situation over here. And I don't know how much people can be involved in taking care of what to do. But we're going to be in a big situation with the war cycle.
That is certainly concerning. Let me shift gears a minute and go back to something we talked about in the first segment, if I could. You had mentioned that you think stocks probably have one more move up before we see a down cycle. So if you could, for our listeners, describe what you think that looks like, particularly when the down cycle starts. When might that start? And how low do you think stocks go?
Well, I don't want to take sleep away from your listeners. The cycles that caused the top in 1929 are gonna be topping again. I have to look on the website exactly what it is. I don't want to give it away. So that's a major problem. Now, we all know that we have a big problem over here. We're gonna have a major war. We're gonna have a major deficit crisis. We're going to have a major terrorist attacks within the United States caused by people and terrorists coming in through the border over here. So we can figure out why this is going to happen. Probably things happen that we cannot think about. We could not think about the virus situation before, and everything will come together. And we're going to major depression coming. It's all explained to my website. So this is not something that, oh, we're going to have some correction. It's going to have a life and death situation to stay afloat for people who have some investments.
So, Dr. Denner, when you say major depression, are you forecasting that we will see something along the lines of the deflationary depression we saw in the 1930s? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, that's what I'm suggesting, and probably even worse.
So, how long do you say this when does this start, and how long do you think it lasts?
Well, it how long it lasts, I have to work on that. And when it starts, I don't want to give it away yet. I don't want people to be too. But if they look at my website, we show exactly how we calculate it, and slowly they can get used to the idea. I don't want to throw these things out without people, looking at the underlying research and lose their sleep at night.
So before we go back and visit one more market, you made another rather concerning statement, and that is that you believe there are more terrorist attacks coming. How do you arrive at that conclusion?
I have a lot of contacts. As you know, is most of the time I live in Israel, and I hear a lot of things. And if you have a lot of, let's say you got a lot of people from Iran coming in, you have a lot of Chinese coming in. Now, Chinese cannot leave China without the Communist Party allowing you to leave. You can't leave over there. So how did it get over here? And be honest, if you will be a country that doesn't like United States, won't you take advantage of the fact that you can send your people already in to the United States? Look what's going on in the universities. You think that's by coincidence that these people are calling for the end of the United States? I mean, it's just happening. We're just watching it from day to day, and nobody wakes up. Who are these people? These people are not Americans, and we continue to bring them in. And if I were to be a Russian or a Chinese or a North Korea or Iran, I would say, well, let's, I don't know if we need them now, but let's bring them in. Let's put them in key positions and we'll wake them up, the sleeper cells, whenever we need them.
So, Dr. Nenner, let's go back to the whole idea of your forecast of a depression. How does someone survive what's coming politically, economically, and investing markets? You mentioned that you have to be active. Is that your solution?
Well, it depends. For small investors, difficult. Big investors, they buy gold. There are companies that you transfer money to. They buy physical gold and put it in the safe because something's going to happen to the dollar. They're going to make it a digital dollar. Once, sorry, once it's a digital dollar, you have a big problem because, let's say, you want to fly to Spain on vacation, and by the end of the year you want to fly, I don't know, somewhere else. They might say, listen, this is not good for the climate. We don't allow you to buy another ticket because they see it in digital dollar, so you can't even do whatever you want. There's a lot going on. We saw from the situation with the virus that they know how to control everything, and once the dollar become a digital dollar, your freedom is totally gone. So that's a lot of big investors know exactly what to do. A lot of my big investors, they $400,000 to $200,000, they get a visa to one of the islands in the Caribbean. Just if the war starts over here, they have somewhere to go. Again, for the small investor, it's an impossible situation. We know Mr. Zuckerberg has a whole underground situation where he's going into if the war starts. Like I said, but the average investor that still has some money is preparing himself. I have people in the Midwest that calculate exactly if there's a nuclear war on the East Coast, which way the wind is blowing and where they should go. So there's a lot going on. And again, I don't want to worry the small investor because he's stuck. He cannot do much. But a big part of the investment public is preparing themselves. Now, the other thing that there was, they're preparing themselves for the big crash in the housing market again. You would ask me how they're preparing. Well, like we did in 2006, we worked at two stocks. One is Lennar and one is Toll Brothers. And we just bought some out of the money, long-term out of the money puts on those stocks. And for instance, I give you an example. Lennar, I don't remember where it was 100 and it went to $2. And we loaded up on long-term puts and people made much more money that they lost on their home. So there are ways to hedge the loss on your home because people don't want to sell their home for emotional reasons. But that all you have to watch our research, and then we try to keep you as safe as you can.
So, Dr. Nenner, you're projecting that stocks will go low. You're projecting that real estate goes lower. Are we in, based on your research, are we in really this everything bubble where this deflationary depression that you're forecasting is just going to wipe out the value of nearly every asset?
Well, let me give you one more example. If you go to a broker, sorry, you go to a broker, he says, I like to invest in stocks. Is it a good time? So the broker will tell you stocks go up average 8-9% a year. You probably heard that.
Right,
So
right.
that's based on the fact that if you draw a line on an angle of 9% from 1900, it goes up on the average 9%. The problem is we're about 90% above that line. So that means is if you want to go back to that line, you have to go down 90%, and then you're back on the average of 9%. So to tell somebody it goes up 9% on the average is totally nonsense. Now, there's another thing that people can Google. It's called the Buffett indicator. The Buffett indicator looks at the value of the stock market compared to the GDP. And you see that it's so high that it has been like this, I think, two times in history. And every time it collapses. So you have an objective idea if the market is expensive or not. But I'm sure that most investors or people that follow you don't even know what the Buffett indicator is. So first of all, you have to know if the market is expensive or not. Don't only look at the price earnings, which is already expensive. Look at these indicators. And that's why in the next rally, all the big guys are selling out to the small guys that listen to the media says, oh, here go again. The bull market continues as it's the last time that it goes up and you better sell into it.
Well, the clock says, Dr. Nenner, we're going to have to leave it there. There's so much more to talk about. We'll have to have you back down the road. My guest today has been Dr. Charles Nenner. His website is charlesnenner.com. You can get a 30-day free trial to check out his work. No credit card needed. Again, the website, charlesnenner.com. Dr. Nenner, always appreciate your perspective. Always appreciate reviewing your research. Thank you for joining us today, and love to have you back down the road.
I'm sorry that I had to be a bit negative, but some things have to be said.
Well, I certainly appreciate you sharing your research, and I know the listeners do as well. We will return after these words. Welcome back to RLA Radio. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen, and thanks to Dr. Charles Nenner for joining us on today's program. In the first segment of today's program, I talked about the fact that ever since the US dollar became a fiat currency in 1971, we have been accumulating debt as a country. I'm talking about the United States here. We've been accumulating debt as a country. And the amount of debt that we are accumulating is growing exponentially. In 1971, there was less than $1 trillion in debt. We now have about $35 trillion in debt. And in the first segment, I talked about the fact that really there's only two alternatives. One, we either stop accumulating debt cold turkey and we deal with a deflationary environment that emerges as a result. Or two, we continue to accumulate debt. We paper over the debt problem with newly created currency, and we end up with a highly inflationary or hyperinflationary environment. Now, I mentioned in the first segment also that history is loaded with examples of politicians continuing to create currency to the point that the currency is destroyed or at least severely damaged. Weimar Germany after World War I, France in the 18th century twice, the Roman Empire, colonial America, those were all examples that I gave you. It's not as often that politicians will stand up and proactively address the problem for one simple reason. When you say we're going to stop currency creation, when you say we are going to balance the federal budget so we don't have to create currency, there's a lot of economic pain that follows such a bold decision. But it is happening now at one place in the world. Where is that place, you might wonder? It is Argentina. Newly elected president Javier Milei in Argentina ran for office on a platform of balancing the budget. He was seen at campaign rallies with chainsaws to illustrate that he was going to cut spending. Within 9 weeks of taking office, President Milei balanced the budget. How did he do that? Not really rocket science. He slashed spending across the board. When Milei took office, inflation in Argentina was out of control. Inflation was officially running at almost 300% annually. Now, inflation is cutting back. Argentina's monthly inflation rate was 25.5% in December, 20.6% in January, and 13.2% in February. Those are admittedly still very big numbers. Those are very economically painful numbers. However, the good news is in 2 months, the inflation rate has been cut almost in half. Now, Milei, stating the obvious, laid out his strategy to get inflation under control. He said, quote, if the state does not spend more than it collects and does not issue money, there is no inflation. This is not magic, end quote. Malai said, quote, if the state does not spend more than it collects and does not issue money, there is no inflation. This is not magic, end quote. And it appears that his strategy is beginning to work. Now, incidentally, the economic principle that Malai outlined is not unique to Argentina. It is universally applicable to any government that issues money. When you issue money, when you create currency from thin air, you get inflation. It's that simple. Now, Malai is making progress, but the progress is not coming without economic pain. Malai knows that as bad as the pain might be presently from austerity, from budget cuts, it'll be a lot less painful now than if they keep kicking the proverbial can down the road and have some future politician deal with this reactively. Now, in the news just a week ago, was Milei celebrating the first budget surplus for Argentina's government since 2008. Milei called it an historic achievement. In the first quarter of 2024, Argentina recorded a budget surplus, which is the equivalent of about $400 million. That's about 0.2% of gross domestic product. Malai, to achieve this goal, laid off thousands of government workers. And he warned them at the time of their layoffs, quote, do not expect a way out through public spending. If we don't have the money, we're not going to spend it. Now, there is deflation starting to emerge. There are protests starting to emerge in Argentina. This will not be without economic pain. University students, unions, opposition parties are staging marches to protest cuts to public education, to research, and to science. In fact, one of the directors of the University of Buenos Aires said that at the rate at which they're funding us, we can only function between 2 and 3 more months. This is not without fallout. But if Malai and Argentina can stay the course, the policies will bear fruit after a painful period of deflation. And Argentina may just have a chance to get back to its former glory. At one time, Argentina was one of the wealthiest countries in the world, with Buenos Aires having the nickname Paris of South America. And that, of course, all changed as Argentina became more socialistic. Now, I'm running out of time for today's program. However, let me remind you that the May special report is the Probate Avoidance Guide. Happy to get you a complimentary copy of it. All you need to do is visit requestyourreport.com. The website again, requestyourreport.com. Just let me know where to mail that report as well as the bonus information, and I will be very glad to do so. Again, the website, requestyourreport.com. That's all for me this week. Have a great week.